Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi guys, quick one before we get into the episode. This episode is sponsored by Zencastr, which is the production suite that I've used from the very beginning of this podcast. And if you're interested in starting your own podcast, hang around at the end of the episode for our 30% discount referral code. Thanks.
So our podcast is called Right and Wrong.
Are these your notes? These are your notes about what we're going to say?
Anything. Nailed it. It's a short answer.
So how many novels did you not finish?
Oh my prior? God, so many.
It was perfect. What are you talking about? This is nonsense.
Ooh, a spicy question. I love it.
This is it, guys. The big secret to getting published is you have to write a good book. You heard it here first. Hello and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. Today, my guest is literary agent Chloe Davis from the Darley Anderson Agency. Hey, Chloe.
Hey.
Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on.
So, is September a busy time of year for literary agencies?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, September's when we start building up to the Frankfurt Book Fair in October. So, it all starts getting a bit manic. You know, we're helping our rights team get their rights guides ready. And also it's a time when a lot of agents choose to start sending out their submissions to editors. So, you know, everyone's getting submissions ready. It's a really busy time, but it's an exciting time, you know, especially this year after a couple of years of not having Frankfurt Book Fair.
Yeah.
It feels really kind of buzzy again and really nice to have that, physical fair again after a couple of years of just virtual fairs and meetings.
Yeah, that's definitely in the wake of all of these lockdowns and things, opening up again has been just kind of more exciting for things that were a regular kind of thing before, are much more exciting now.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it feels a lot more normal now. And we went to Bologna, we went to London back in the spring, and that felt really exciting and just really nice to be there and see people again. And I think we're coming back to that. So that's something that's really exciting for us all.
Yeah, that's great. You mentioned that now's the time of year that a lot of agents are getting their submissions ready to send to publishers. How come that happens around this time of year?
I mean, I think it's just the book fair buzz. There seem to be a kind of a few times every year when that's kind of when everyone submits. I mean, you can kind of submit throughout the year, but summer's a bit difficult. You know, people are out of the office. Christmas is also tricky because people are just kind of winding down for the year. So it always kind of seems to coincide with the book fairs. And it's just a really kind of buzzy time of year, really exciting. And that kind of all contributes, I guess. So yeah, no, it's really exciting.
Oh, it's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't realized that there was a sort of peak time for agents to be submitting to publishers. So let's talk about your work as an agent, because you you were originally a bookseller at Waterstones. Then you were working in, was it rights at Pan Macmillan?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then you became an assistant agent at Darley Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And now you are building your own list as a junior agent.
Yeah.
How has that kind of changed from being an agent's assistant to being a junior agent with your own kind of list growing?
It's been a big leap, you know. When you start as an assistant, you're basically just kind of doing all the admin jobs and supporting the agents in your team.
Yeah.
And you can learn a lot, but there is also so much to learn when you start agenting for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just so many things that you might not have been aware of when you were just assisting. It's a steep learning curve, but it's amazing. And I'm so, so lucky that I've got a really supportive team behind me. You know, I can ask them any questions. They often take a look at my clients' work, just to give me a second opinion. And also they have so many more years of expertise behind them. It's a big jump. You learn on the job, you know, there's nothing that you can really do beforehand, I think, to prepare you for some of the elements of agenting. And also, you know, you've got the added responsibility, which you didn't have before, of looking after people's careers and their kind of hopes and dreams. And nothing really prepares you for that, I think. And also for the for how much, like that kind of depth of feeling of how much you want to be able to help your authors and do well for them, do the best for them. I think that's something that I hadn't anticipated maybe when I, before I started agenting.
Yeah, I can see that. There's a sort of an emotional weight that comes with the whole job. So yes. When did you start building your list?
I started in October 2020, I think now, although the last couple of years have kind of blurred into one.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was October 2020. And then I was officially a junior agent, I think January 2021. So yeah, it's been almost a couple of years now. I'm kind of steadily building my list, just basically taking on anything that I really love at the moment, whilst also I'm still assisting Claire Wallace at our agency. Mm-hmm. So I've got kind of two jobs on the go at the moment, as it were.
Yeah, it's amazing how often that happens, because it's quite most, I think most agents do start the way that you started, where they work at an agency and then become a junior agent or whatever the title is.
Yeah.
But there is a part in the middle where you are doing multiple jobs.
Yes.
Wearing many hats.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's great to have, you know, I feel really lucky that I've been given the opportunity to take on clients. But it's a juggle. There's a lot to think about and a lot to do, and you want to do the best you can for everyone and for the agency. Yeah. It's a lot, but in a really exciting way.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. The one thing I've found with every agent that I've met is that you just love publishing and you love books and you love stories. And it's so much of the job is just based off the kind of veracity of which people love reading.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's why most of us are in the industry, for the love of books, really. We all have that in common. It's really nice to be able to share that with everyone.
Yeah. And speaking of love of books, so building your own list, what are the age ranges and the genres that you really love, that you're really like looking to add to your list?
I mean, I'm happy to consider anything. But I would say that middle grade is my kind of heartland. That's what I've always loved. And I think that's, when I think back to my childhood, I just really remember reading so many great middle grade books. And I think that's where my love of books came from. That's when it was born. So that's what I'm always kind of drawn to. And I think most of my list at the moment is made up of middle grade authors. I like anything with a lot of heart and warmth. Anything that just makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside. I love great supportive friendships in books. And just anything, you know, funny, escapist, with a great adventure, great mystery, and that kind of goes for YA as well and picture books. YA, I love a good romance. I'm a sucker for a romance story. With kind of tropes, enemies to lovers, anything like that, I love. Fantasy YA isn't really my thing, but I'm happy to take a look at submissions. That's probably one of the areas that I haven't read as much. But I mean, I'm kind of open to anything at this point. I love chapter books as well. Anything funny for kind of, you know, the 5 to 7, 8 age range as well. And picture books too. I think anything with a kind of lovely message that children can take away, but that isn't too obvious or kind of didactic. I'm open to most things really.
Yeah. But do you pretty much try and stay in the lanes of picture book, middle grade, YA? You don't really go into it?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely just focused on children's and illustration as well. I'm open to illustration submissions as well.
Okay, amazing. This is a perfect segue into submissions because it's always interesting when agents come on the podcast to ask them about the sort of different ways in which agents and agencies approach submissions. First question, as Claire Wallace's assistant.
Yeah.
Are you often the first person to see the submissions that are that would eventually reach Claire?
Yeah, I can be. I mean, I think it depends. We have a few. I mean, we have a children's inbox where people submit to, and that's I share that with Lydia, who's an agent also at the agency. So we both have kind of first look on that, depending on who dips into the submissions inbox. And then Claire receives a lot of her own submissions, and that's kind of her own email address. Okay. And she'll take a look at those. But sometimes we share, it depends on kind of workload, how our weeks are looking. So I can be the first person to see them sometimes, and sometimes it's Claire or Lydia who take a look. It depends, really.
Yeah. As your role has changed and you are now a junior agent building your own list, is there less of a sort of, I mean, it obviously put you in such great stead having already had so much sort of experience and practice going through submissions. But now that you are building your own list, do you still pass submissions on to Claire or Lydia or whoever it is? Or if you really like something, is it now you get first dibs?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all work really well as a team, and we all have really different, we don't really overlap, so there's no kind of sense of competition or anything like that.
Okay.
But I mean, if I really like something, I would send it to them for a second opinion just to get their thoughts, because it's always just really helpful to get someone else's thoughts on something, on a submission. But if I really loved it, then I could go ahead and take it on. And I have done quite a few times now. So, I don't need anyone's kind of permission or anything. If I love something, then I can just go for it.
Awesome. That's so exciting. I love it. Email the author. Let's talk.
It's so exciting. The first few times I did it, I was just like, the first time I took a client on, I was over the moon. I was so excited. We did this whole kind of happy dance around my house. it's so exciting.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, so you've had a lot of experience looking through submissions, now building your own list. When you go to look at submissions, when you and the submission package at Darley Anderson it's pretty standard for the industry. It's for fiction, first three chapters are 20 pages, a one page synopsis. Then nonfiction is just the proposal, chapter list, sample chapters.
Yeah.
Obviously with the cover letter on top. So when you head over to your emails, you open up Pandora's submission box to go through them. What order do you go through the submission, and how much focus do you give to each of the parts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it depends for everyone, but for me, I always go to the cover letter first, just to get a sense of what kind of story the author is pitching. Is it something that I've been looking for, that I'd be interested in? I want to see the pitch, any comp titles that have been included. And having read that, then I would move on to the sample chapters. I just want to get a sense of the author's writing style, the voice in the writing. Is it something that I am going to really love? And if I really enjoy it, then I would go to the synopsis and see, how the story is going to pan out, if there are any major curveballs. That's kind of the way I would do it normally.
Okay. Are there any sort of red flags that you sometimes sort of see in maybe the cover letter?
I don't know about red flags. I mean, there are things that we always look for. We want a great pitch, comp titles, if you have any. It's not essential. But if you do have a great comp title, then definitely include it. And I think it also shows that you've done kind of market research and that you're aware of what's out there on the shelves. If it's a modern title, we usually tend to kind of like the comp titles to be a bit more contemporary.
Yeah.
And I think it's always quite nice to see a personalized cover letter. It doesn't have to be. I would never, ever reject anything if the cover letter wasn't personalized to me. But it's always nice to see that an author has done their research, and that they've given reasons about why they think their submission might be right for you and why you might be the right agent for them. That always kind of makes me sit up and listen a tiny bit more. But again, you know, I would never reject anything that wasn't personalized. I don't think there are any kind of red flags, really. And everyone has their different styles. Everyone's different.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love hearing about the author as well. Just, you know, you want a little bit about them. Just to know, you know, who they are, basically, and why, maybe like why they've written this story and why it's important to them. But yeah, I mean, no major red flags as such, I don't think.
Does it add... sort of, does it grab your attention more if you see in the cover letter that they have, you know, been longlisted, shortlisted, or entered lots of awards and things?
I mean, it's always nice to see, but yeah. I mean, I wouldn't reject anything that hadn't been longlisted or, you know, shortlisted or, you know, that hadn't won an award.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, if you have entered a competition and have been shortlisted or have had success, then definitely include that because, you know, that's pertinent information and it's something that we should probably know.
Yeah. Mm. And I noticed it made me laugh is on the agency website for the submission process, it does say one page synopsis and then there's a note afterwards that says, please do include all spoilers.
Yeah.
Is that something that, because I've spoken to agents who don't want to see the spoilers, I've also spoken to agents who go straight to the synopsis to read the spoilers before they even read the chapters.
Mm.
Where do you land on the sort of like wanting to know the spoilers versus not, or wanting to sort of experience the prose before you read the synopsis?
I mean, I want spoilers. I want to know what happens. I don't know. I feel like for me, it just makes everything clearer in my head if I know where it's going and what the outcomes are.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, our time is kind of limited and sometimes we're super busy and that just helps us get a faster sense of what the book is about. Mm-hmm. So I think everyone at Darley Anderson Children's Book Agency anyway wants to know the spoilers. I think all of my colleagues like to work that way. It just makes things a lot easier for us. We can get a sense of where it's going, where the story's going.
Yeah, it's only logical that you would do that. And any properly written synopsis, it by its very nature contains all of the spoilers for whatever the book is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always interesting to know that there are some agents who just sometimes don't even bother with the synopsis.
Yeah, I find that really interesting, actually. Or people who just don't want spoilers. I think it's quite funny. I mean, I don't think I could work like that, but I get why some people prefer that. It's just, yeah, it's kind of funny to think about.
I can understand the argument. It's that they want to experience the book in the way that a reader would experience it to get the authentic feel of the writing and stuff.
Yeah. And I think for me, I can still feel that even knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't feel that kind of kills it for me. So,
I watched a long video essay a while back about how it was impossible to spoil a high quality story.
Yeah.
And they referenced things like The Sixth Sense or Fight Club. And they say, if someone told you beforehand the big twist, you would still enjoy that movie. You would just enjoy it in a completely different way from having not been told the twist.
Yeah, and I think, you know, great writing speaks for itself, really.
Yeah.
And as you say, you can still enjoy it for what it is, and you know, you can spot a great story even knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah, and sometimes knowing what's going to happen, you get that extra level of dramatic irony where you're then trying to put all the pieces together and think, well, how are we going to end up? I know we're ending up at point B, but how are we getting there from point A?
Yeah,
which is cool.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So with that submission stuff fresh in our minds, September 2022, you are open to submissions and actively building your list. Mm. We know the wider scope of what you're looking for generally, middle grade, but some YA romance. Is there any more specific things that you're looking for? Maybe like specific characters or storylines that you'd love to see in the sort of latter months of this year?
I mean, I'm always really keen to see anything from kind of people from underrepresented backgrounds, you know, maybe kind of less, just kind of families of all shapes and sizes. I think anything that's kind of super relatable to children nowadays, you know, we get, you know, parents from, you know, all around the world. And, you know, my mom's Mexican, and I often didn't see books where parents were from different countries, for example, when I was growing up. So I'm always interested in that, or in anything that kind of, anything with different kind of cultural references, you know, things that have a new, stories that have a new angle, perspective, voices that we haven't maybe heard before. I'm really open to that. To be honest, I'm not really looking for any kind of specific plot lines or anything like that. Just something that will make me feel something, if that's super vague, but I just want something to kind of hit me right in the feels. And like, yeah, I just want to be able to feel the soul of the book. And I do love kind of heartwarming. I love kind of stories that celebrate quiet children, because I was also really quiet as a child. I was super shy. So I love, you know, not every child is going to be loud and bouncy and full of energy. And I love books that celebrate children that maybe aren't that, maybe that are quieter, that don't have so much confidence, where we see them kind of coming out of their shells and learning that they are enough. I love anything like that, really.
That's great. Well, that's really helpful. And that's really nice to hear. And on from that, there are a lot of authors out there about to start querying or already querying. What advice would you have to people in the middle of their submitting to agents?
First of all, I know it can be such a slog and a disheartening process. So I think my main advice really is to keep going and to not try. I know it's hard. Try not to be too disheartened by rejections. They're hard for us too, and we don't like doing it. Kind of keep going, and also kind of pat yourself on the back because you've already done something that's really hard and really brave, you know, putting yourself out there. I think also just make sure that you know which agents, you know, open to submissions, who wants what. Make sure that you're kind of tailoring your submission to the agents. I think more than anything, I know it's so hard. That's the thing. I know it's such a hard process for authors. Keep going and maybe don't compare yourself to anyone else on social media, because that's always it's always a slippery slope, I think.
Yeah, it's so easy to do, and it's so easy to forget that when you see the bookseller headline of brand new author signs six figure deal in massive bidding war, it's like, that's one in a million.
You know,
don't compare yourself to that. If it happens, amazing, but it's one in a million that happens.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we see on social media is just people's highlights, really.
Yeah.
You don't see all the rest, all the kind of heartbreak and all the bad times behind it all. So definitely I would say don't compare yourself to anyone on social media. Everyone's got their own journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very good advice. Persevere as well.
Yes, definitely.
Before we get onto the final question, the much dreaded desert island question, I have to ask.
Yes.
You have worked in publishing through a number of different roles. Have you ever wanted to write yourself?
No, definitely not. No, that's something I've never, ever been good at. I've never been good at creative writing. I tried as a child, and no, it just didn't go well. I just don't have those skills, and I really admire everyone who does, because I definitely don't. I think that's why I'm this side of the industry, not on the writing side. I don't think you'll ever see a book with my name on the cover, ever.
it's a very different skill, being creative writing and editorial.
Yes.
Are you quite editorial with your authors?
Yes, yeah, definitely. As an agency, we're all really hands-on. I think we're all really talented at what we do. And we do work really closely with our authors. I mean, obviously, it's kind of led by the author and what they want and what works for them. So it kind of depends. Some authors want to brainstorm, and we're happy to do that with them, or others just go off and write something and come to us when it's ready. But we would always work with them to get it in the best shape possible to send it out. And we've been known in the past to work with authors for, you know, up to a year on a text, just to make sure that it's as kind of watertight as possible. So we love working really editorially with our authors.
Yeah, and I mean, it's good to know that you're willing to sort of put in the time with an author to not send a submission to a publisher before it's ready.
No, we're always really happy to do that. And that's not just me, but that's Claire and Lydia and Becca as well, the other agents at the agency. We all love working really closely with our authors. And that's something that I think that just makes us all really happy and satisfied. And we want our authors to know that we're here for them as well. And we're happy to listen to anything. And we like hearing their thoughts about their manuscripts. That's something that's really important to us.
Awesome. That sounds like a really great environment and sort of very welcoming as well to authors who probably haven't experienced, you know, when you first come to an agency and then you're on this whole roller coaster of publishing. It's nice to know that you guys have that sort of, we'll work on it until it's ready, and that very supportive atmosphere.
Yeah, definitely. And we all support each other and each other's clients, and we all work really closely together. So hopefully, I think we'd like to think that we've created a nice environment for everyone, and hopefully our authors feel that too.
Amazing. Awesome. Well, that brings us to the final question, which, as always, is, Chloe, if you were stranded on a desert island with a single book, which book would it be?
This is such a hard question. I know everyone says that, and I've been giving it some thought, but it's so hard to pin down one book. And I think because I'm not the kind of person, like, I don't reread books. So once I've enjoyed it, I kind of put it down and that's that. And it's like, it lives in my memory, but I don't feel the need to pick it up again. So that makes it tricky. But I mean, I feel like, I don't think I could pin it down to one, but maybe the only thing I could think of really was like something really long to keep you going. You know, if you don't want to be able to finish it in an hour and then have to reread it. Yeah. That would be really dull. So I was thinking, what have I loved in the past? And when I was a child, or maybe not a child, but kind of teenager, I remember I loved reading or watching Dickens adaptations on TV and then reading the books. So I thought maybe a really long Dickens book, like David Copperfield, something that felt kind of comforting, but was also long, so that, you know, that could keep me going for a while. And then I could, you know, put it down and then start again. And that would take me another, you know, a couple of weeks maybe. so something wrong like that. I just couldn't pin it down to one thing. It's too hard.
What if you could take a complete works? So let's say the complete works of Dickens. Would it be Dickens if you could take a complete works?
Oh, God. I don't know. I mean, to be honest, recently I've really enjoyed Taylor Jenkins Reid and all her books. So I might take all of her books, actually. I feel like that would be a good set of books to have. Something really escapist to make you forget the hell of what you're living through.
Yeah, probably for the best.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. I like that you really thought that one through, and it seemed to cause you only a little bit of anxiety.
But yeah, there was a lot of discussion of this with colleagues and family members, trying to figure out what I was going to say.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Chloe, for coming on the podcast and sharing your experience in the publishing industry and your work as an agent with me and everyone listening. It's been really interesting chatting with you.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me on. It's been fun. It's been really good.
And for anyone listening, if you want to keep up with what Chloe's doing, you can follow her on Twitter at ChloeMDavis95 or on Instagram at ChloeDavisAgent. To make sure you don't miss an episode of this podcast, follow us on Twitter at RightAndWrongUK or on Instagram at RightAndWrongPodcast. Thanks again to Chloe, and thanks to everyone listening. We'll catch you in the next episode. Thanks for hanging around until the end. If you're interested in starting your own podcast but aren't really sure what that looks like, I can't recommend Zencastr enough. It's so simple to host, record, and download your podcast with, and it even has a built-in transcription AI. It functions entirely in the internet browser, which means all your guests have to do is click on a link and they'll be brought into the conversation. If you click on the link in the description, you'll get 30% off the first 3 months. All you have to do is click on the link in the description.
Thanks again for supporting the show, and we'll see you in the next episode.